Hello, this is Matthew Hennessy, Managing Editor and Deputy Director of Policy Research at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research here in New York City. I'm pleased to have on the line Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow Mark Mills to discuss his new report, The Case for Exports: America's Hydrocarbon Industry Can Revive the Economy and Eliminate the Trade Deficit. Mark's report is the third in a series of papers that he's written under the banner of the Institute's Power and Growth Initiative, which is focused on increasing public understanding of North America's abundant energy resources and encouraging public policies that will allow the United States to harness the benefits for our economy and for our influence in the world of that abundance. Mark, thanks for being with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Matt.
For a long time, Americans have bemoaned and fretted over our so-called dependence on foreign oil. Is energy independence just a dream?
Well, it was a dream. It was Nixon's dream. In fact, it predates Nixon. It goes back to a meeting of the American Petroleum Institute in 1949, where they worried about the potential for rising dependence on oil imports. It's a very old, half-century-long worry. But the independence word is an important one. We will, I think, always be dependent on geopolitical events impacting us. It's impossible to avoid that. And that's not what people really meant when they said energy independence. And every president has talked about it for nearly half a century. What they really mean is economic independence, the dependency on other people for a significant amount of commodities or products America needs. And it's no longer a dream. It's now entirely possible in a decade or a little more, not much longer. The United States could be economically independent of energy imports, oil and gas imports, oil in particular, and that we can become an exporter, which would be a marvelous place to be from an economics perspective, and it would be a much better place to be geopolitically, because then we're not beholden to countries that we really are not friendly with.
So what's changed since 1949?
Well, two things changed, and they both happened sort of at the same time. One is that the rest of the world has become a much faster and bigger consumer of energy in general, oil in particular. So the United States has gone through its growth phase, and we continue to grow, but we're not the primary source of growth and demand for oil in particular, or natural gas in the world, or coal. We consume a lot, but all the growth is now occurring outside of the United States. In fact, over the next two decades, the quantity of energy that would be required to fuel the world outside of the United States is equal to adding two United States worth of demand of energy. It's a remarkable growth that's happening in the rest of the world. So the demand is outside of the world. The other thing that's changed, which is really big and quite remarkable, is that technology has advanced the ability, particularly of North American companies, to produce oil and gas. And we've always had a lot of oil and gas in the United States. We have huge resources. They've just been hard to tap with existing technologies of decades ago. Well, what I call, and I think the properly phrased, smart drilling, has made it possible to generate more oil and gas production in the United States in the last few years than anywhere else in the world. I mean, it's a remarkable turnaround in technology. Unsubsidized technology. It's not the technologies that everybody was focusing on in the last 5 or 10 years to break our so-called addiction to oil. These are technologies that have advanced in parallel with information technologies everywhere else, and they've been applied to oil and gas fields.
So technology has allowed us to, has unlocked all of our oil and natural gas. Some people wonder, why don't we just keep it here? Natural gas is pretty cheap at the moment. Won't exporting it all cause prices to rise for American manufacturers and American consumers?
Well, it's a reasonable concern. You can understand why people would think that way. But I think there's two problems with the thought. One is I'll call it philosophical, but it's very practical. If we substitute the words wheat or soy or microprocessors or ethylene, a chemical, for oil and natural gas, and ask why America should be allowed to export anything it produces and to other people, other buyers around the world, the question just doesn't make any sense. Obviously, we like to export things, to sell things to other people who are willing to buy it. And you want to sell what you have to willing buyers. It's called free trade, and it's almost always overwhelmingly a good thing for America. But the other problem with the argument is it presumes we don't have enough. I mean, some of the people who say these things, other than the fact they're trying to game the system, I mean, there's a certain amount of that goes on in corporations all over the world all the time. I understand that. They give it a shot, and that's nice. They want to make sure they get cheap stuff for themselves and advantage themselves for the government process. But the sort of the nagging underlying fear, I think, of some people is that we shouldn't export our abundance in oil and gas because it's a short-term bubble in their heads. And what they don't really have not fully accepted is that we have astounding quantity of resources, and the technologies made it essentially and for all practical purposes unlimited. And by all practical purposes, I mean for decades and decades, time frames that matter, centuries. And we can produce enough to do both. We can produce enough to make lower cost energy for American manufacturers and ship profitably oil and gas to consumers around the world.
So why aren't we?
Well, we are doing some of it. It is difficult to export natural gas because you have to convert it to a liquid first by supercooling it to minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit. That's an expensive process, takes time, billions of dollars of facilities. But the real reason we're not exporting a lot more is that it's illegal. It's a bizarre artifact of old laws, in some cases dating back to 1938, that exporters or producers of natural gas and oil have to ask permission of the federal government to export their product. Now, this is not true for wheat and microprocessors. It's not true for lumber and furnishing, and it's not true for very much of anything except military products. And we have this legacy of laws in the country that require natural gas producers to ask permission of the Department of Energy to spend billions of dollars to export products to sell to, say, Japan or France or in South Korea. And we have this very strange, ancient law that makes it illegal to export crude oil, which makes absolutely no sense in the modern context. Now, it is legal to export gasoline and diesel fuel, and we do export a lot of that. In fact, exports of diesel and gasoline have soared in the last few years so much so that we're now a net exporter of refined petroleum products. But we just don't have enough refinery capacity, nor does it make any sense for the United States government to try to micromanage a global economy to guess exactly what we should export when to who and whether there should be permission. Again, if you just substitute the word wheat and imagine that a wheat farmer had asked permission of the Department of Agriculture to sell grain overseas, it makes no sense whatsoever in the modern context.
So what are we missing out on? What sort of economic benefits would you imagine are possible if the U.S. government were to repeal that law from 1938 and allow exports of crude oil and natural gas?
Well, the benefits we're missing is accelerating, and it would require more, in my view, more than just repealing what are, is probably no more simple word to say than goofy old laws. They really are. But we need to do more than that. We need to take impediments away from the increased production of natural gas and oil because we have a lot of impediments that have been put in place. But the benefits we're talking about are astounding. Look, it falls into three buckets. First, the private sector, and this is not government money, this is not taxpayers' money, the private sector is prepared to spend a cumulative $5 trillion over the coming decade on the infrastructure associated with oil and gas production. This will generate millions of jobs, high-paying jobs, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars of revenues to the state and federal treasuries. And it will, in addition to that, cut our trade deficit. This is, to me, the most remarkable thing here. Is if we encourage increased production, not discourage it. Right now we're not encouraging it, we're actually discouraging it. Not only can the United States export hydrocarbons, oil and gas and coal, it can radically reduce its imports. We have the biggest trade deficit on the planet. The United States trade deficit is almost as big as the combined trade deficits of the next 30 largest nations. It's ridiculous. And 40% of our trade deficit is from importing oil. The trade deficit is a huge drag on the U.S. economy and a huge job-killing, deficit-generating economic fact of our life for decades now. It can be ended. This is the single biggest economic stimulus to the economy from one sector that's possible in the United States today. And it's before us without the need for government funding or stimulus. The only stimulus is not economic. It would simply be one of cleaning up the regulatory morass, encouraging the production, and eliminating silly laws that prohibit companies from spending billions of dollars to export and sell products to foreign buyers.
Well, Mark, what specifically does the government need to do to get the export ball rolling and allow us to start benefiting from all these resources?
I put the government's role here in really three simple buckets. First is short term. We need to immediately approve all of the pending exports of companies that want to export natural gas. Just to do that. We should approve the Keystone XL pipeline, which is bringing heavy Canadian crude into the Gulf Coast refineries, which will replace Venezuelan crude. I mean, what a great trade. These would send the right signals to into the marketplace, into the business community. The second thing that should be done is that the government and the legislature should immediately re-examine everything to do with our energy policy that's simply upside down. It makes no sense at all to have these kind of authority in the Department of Commerce and the Department of Energy determining when, where, and how oil and gas can be exported. And then the third is a generic one. We need to do everything possible to encourage oil and gas production in the United States. We essentially manufacture oil and natural gas. What we have in place today is the wrong psychology. Legislation and regulations and regulators are very much focused on either discouraging or controlling and limiting oil and natural gas production. This is backwards and needs to be reversed. All forms of legislation that are pending or exist that impede oil and gas production really ought to be reexamined, in many cases repealed.
Well, Mark, that's all the time we have, but thanks for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
To read Mark Mills' The Case for Exports and other Manhattan Institute reports, please visit www.manhattan-institute.org.